Good morning. Buenos dias. My name is Reverend Maria Cristina, and I am so proud to be the minister at this wonderful congregation, East Shore. Welcome, welcome, everyone. Bienvenidos. We have prepared today a wonderful service with many voices, and we're going to talk about parenting as a spiritual practice. And we have wonderful people lined up to share with us their journey in parenting.
Good morning. I am Dr. Catherine Ramsey. My pronouns are she, her, and my PhD is in molecular and cell biology. I've been a member of East Shore since the fall of 1999, when we moved to Mercer Island from the Midwest. I'm married to Tom Ball, and we have two children, David, who is now 30, and Lauren, who is 22. David was in first grade when we moved here, and a number of his Sunday school teachers are here. His response to the story for all ages, as delivered by the Reverend Dr. Peter Luton, is one of the main reasons we chose East Shore as our spiritual home. Both our children attended religious exploration classes every year until they each completed the year-long high school OWL class, which covers identity and sexuality. Choosing to become a parent was not a foregone conclusion for either Tom or me. As we neared the end of graduate school in Madison, Wisconsin, we saw our friends starting families and apparently finding a lot of joy in it. I was 30, and it seemed like the time after defending my thesis would be the best time to take a break from lab work. It was now or never, and a difficult decision. So we went to talk to the minister to help us make this important life choice. Faced with two hardcore logical scientists, she kindly pointed out that there is no logical reason to have children. They are a tremendous amount of work, cost a lot of money, and limit all the other choices you can make in your lives. Our very logical pro and con lists could not give a positive answer. But despite the illogicality of it, we decided to become parents. And this choice led us on a path together with more joy and love than we ever could have imagined. I was burnt out from graduate school and angry at academia, so I took time off my career and became a full-time mother. To my tremendous surprise, I loved mothering. It turns out I was good at it. As a biologist, I found fetal and child development absolutely fascinating. The more I learned about the biological processes involved in the creation of a new person, the more astonished I became that such a complex system could ever work. Watching a person grow and develop skills and express personality traits is the most fascinating thing I have ever done. Scientific understanding of brain and body development has only begun to scratch the surface of all the things that are going on as children grow, leaving enormous space for wonder and amazement. Where science leaves off, awe at the mystery of creation blossoms. I am now a retired stay-at-home mom. While I sometimes regret leaving my scientific career behind, I have lived an incredibly fascinating, joyful, and meaningful life. Watching what was once a ball of undifferentiated cells become a complex and unique human being has been enthralling and intellectually stimulating, and it has filled my heart with more love than I ever imagined possible. I'm so glad that we decided to become parents.
And now it is my pleasure to invite Kathy Falanga, followed by Caroline Hazley, who will share with us their parenting journeys Welcome, Kathy.
Hi, my name is Kathy Falanga. I use she, her pronouns. My husband Bill and I have been attending East Shore since we moved to Bellevue from the East Coast about 26 years ago. We were married here in 2003. I don't know if that was the last time I was up here, but I don't come up here very often. I feel compelled to start by saying when we left for church this morning, our 17-year-old was still in bed because I think he went upstairs to bed around 4:30 this morning. When Reverend Maria Cristina asked if I would share my experience of parenting as a spiritual practice, I'm not going to lie, I had to Google spiritual practice to see how it related to parenting, because my parenting hasn't felt very spiritual. It has felt more like a string of Calgon take me away moments, or like I'm Lucy in the I Love Lucy episode where the chocolate's on the conveyor belt. So back to my Google search. When I Googled spiritual practice, it returned a few words and phrases I could resonate with. So I will share a few experiences related to those results of gratitude, compassion, service to others, and forgiveness. First, I'm grateful my husband and I were able to have a child when he was 52 and I was 41. I'm also grateful that our son Owen is generally a healthy 17-year-old, despite having had brain surgery at 24 months of age to remove a benign brain tumor that was causing seizures. My first lesson in parenthood was that it was terrifying and I had very little control. I'm also grateful that we survived the early years of caring for our baby with no family living nearby to help us. They were 3,000 miles away. As an older mom, one might think I'd be chill and relaxed, but that was not the case. I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't have much experience caring for babies before I had one myself. Fear and anxiety were the first instincts that kicked in, but also something from the Google list. Compassion. All I knew to do was to comfort my crying baby. As tired as I was getting up every hour, I couldn't do the sleep training or put on a loud fan so I wouldn't hear his crying, as a friend who had a baby around the same age told me to do. I had to hear him cry so I could go to him immediately. Even though Owen was a challenge and a half as a baby, a toddler, a child, and still is today as a teen, when I would often reach my limit for the day, he would say or do something sweet that kept me coming back for more. Not that I wouldn't, but. I remember one time when he was around 7 years old and throwing up in the middle of the night, Bill and I were taking turns with him. He eventually fell asleep with his head in his hands over the toilet. And I went and asked Bill to carry him back to his bed because he had gotten too heavy for me by that time. When he got into bed, he wanted me to lie down with him. As I was lying with him, he said, "Mom, I love how you and Dad take care of me." I couldn't believe words of appreciation had come from my 7-year-old's mouth. So I'm going to put this parenting moment under service to others. And I did follow it up by asking my mom if I ever said anything that sweet. And she said, "No." Owen has said many things that have cracked us up over the years, some of which I'm grateful I jotted down in these little notebooks. I have props so I could recall them. I also have in here lots of love notes, but also some hate notes. I'd like to read a few quotes, but before I do, I'm going to share one that is not in the notebook because Bill and I have talked about it so often and shared it with Owen. I don't think I'll forget it. And first, you need to know that Bill has been a full-time parent since Owen was born. He was 10 years older than I, and I went back to work. Bill took Owen to co-op preschool, play dates, park dates. They were very busy. But despite this, Mom seemed to be his preferred parent. Owen was around 3 years old, and he said to me one time when I was putting him to bed, "Mama, why I even need a daddy?" Bill can laugh it off. Then there's this tandem quote in one of these notebooks. This was in 2015 that he said to Dad, Dad, know how I love you more than Mom? No, know how I love Mom more than you? Well, because she's being mean to me, her consequence is that now you are my favorite for 1 year. Also, I'm not going to talk to her tomorrow. Google's results didn't include humor as a spiritual practice, but Owen has always been a very funny kid, and his timing is perfect. Bill and Owen have their unique humor together, as do Owen and I. And then there are the three of us that have our own version of humor. This might be one of the things I'm most grateful for about our little family of three, plus our furry Ella, the dog. Google didn't include fierce as a spiritual practice, but I was never brave or fierce as a person. And being a parent, I noticed one time made me fierce. When I was in middle school, I remember one time when my older sister there was a planned situation in the playground and she was going to be beat up because some boy liked her and not this other girl. So when that circle started to form in the playground, I offered to hold her clarinet because I was afraid of Maria Jemenko myself. My family still talks about how that's all I did. But in first day of second grade, when kids were lining up outside of their class, I saw Owen walk by and get online for class, and a kid behind him said, "Oh no, not Owen." And I was right there. I heard it. Owen did not. And my mama, fierce instinct, rose up in me, and I tapped that kid on the shoulder, and I said, "Owen, that's my son." I was proud of myself that I did that because I would never stand up for someone in the past. Owen is a senior in high school now. He's a grumpy, lazy teen who spends his waking hours when not at school watching YouTube videos and playing Minecraft. Gaming is often the source of our arguments these days because we control the password to his gaming computer. Otherwise, the small chores we ask him to do would never get done. After arguments, Owen is often the first one to initiate repair. Typically, it's because he wants a password, but I'll take it. He'll say, "Mom, let's settle our differences." He will then ask if I have anything I need to apologize for. I do appreciate him getting us back in connection, and I think this qualifies as forgiveness on both our parts. I worry about his future, as I know all parents worry about their children's. I worry if he has the skills or drive he needs to get through the next decade, because I think I provided a little too much service to others as I raise him. When I get home today, I'll probably be making his breakfast. He's been accepted to college, the only one he applied to, but hasn't accepted that offer yet. Will he go? If he does, will he wake up on time and actually go to class? Will his 9.5-year obsession with Minecraft end? Will he venture out, meet new people, have new experiences, or will he just retreat to his dorm room and play Minecraft? These are some of the parenting worries that keep me up at night. I communicate often with my grandmothers who have passed and ask them to watch over Owen and guide him. And I know that my other guardian angels, my two uncles, are also watching over and nudging him. I have often failed to have the patience, maturity, and emotional intelligence needed to be the mother I wanted and thought I'd be, but I am still trying to do better, which is a good thing because I think I still have a lot of parenting left to do. I will close by sharing what my mother texted to me yesterday evening when she asked what we were up to this weekend. I told her I was writing something to talk about at church tomorrow about parenting as a spiritual practice, and she said, "I had a professor in grad school who said the only way to survive parenthood is to focus on the long game." And then she said, "And if I knew what great women the three of you would be, I wouldn't have worried at all." I'm grateful for my mother and that I still have my mother. Thank you. Oh, and P.S., I know where everything is in our home.
Good morning. I'm Caroline Haisley. She, her pronouns.
A few years into motherhood, I discovered the book, A Miracle of Mindfulness, by Thich Nhat Hanh. The renowned Zen master teaches that peace of mind is available in every moment, with every breath. Back then, it seemed unattainable to me. There were messes to clean up, chores to do, meals to prepare, kids that only wanted goldfish crackers to eat, forms to fill out, toddlers refusing to be strapped into car seats, dishes, laundry, shoes too small, birthday cakes, endless juggling. Thich Nhat Hanh's essay on washing the dishes opened my eyes to the universality of mundane tasks. Dishwashing could actually become a less daunting practice of staying in the moment and feeling compassion for others. Wait, you say, who has time to slow down and only focus on one thing? We non-monks spend decades multitasking and getting stuff done faster and faster. Mindfulness is about being fully aware and awake without judgment. So I tried it, doing the dishes without ruminating about the past or planning the future. Would I ever embrace mindful kitchen work as a cleansing ritual worthy of my full attention? One day, in a waiting room, I noticed that I could just for a few moments be still. I started to associate small opportunities like waiting with little glimpses of the balance and peace that were a bit more reachable. More and more, I used those small moments of quiet as reminders to be here now, instead of struggling with my thoughts of hurrying. How restorative it could be to take a break from myself, my rushing, my worrying. In the book, Thich Nhat Hanh beautifully describes how to eat the segments of a tangerine. Don't just grab each piece and mechanically aim it at your mouth. While you haven't yet chewed and savored the piece before, if your mind is distracted by plans for later and getting things done, you miss tasting the tangerine. You don't have to sit and meditate on a cushion for a glimpse of clear insight. Just pause and notice the miracle of breathing. Breathing is so ordinary and yet such a miracle. Doing dishes and waiting are also ordinary. When I am fully awake, these are opportunities to savor being alive. Imagine if everyone in your family and community practiced being awake. People might beg to do the dishes